Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. DA got that dope.
You already know my protocol. I wouldn't say they greedy, but they come back for more.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Fantasy CBB Super Show. I am your host, Walter Waddell, a.k.a. Dumb Deuces 85. Coming off a nice little slate here, we have a lot to talk about. I want to try to talk about both slates. Actually, there are probably three or four main slates for sure. If there's time after that, we'll talk about the late slate. It is the first Saturday without college football on, so I expect a lot of that football money to maybe come over and see what we're all about. There's also a lot of newer touts, I guess, that are starting to do models and other CBB content, so there's going to be more people coming in and playing, and it's not like the old days now. So I will be joined by Razzle tonight. He's going to be calling in here shortly if he hasn't already. We may get a call in from Johnny to talk bets. You guys are always welcome to call in, those of you listening live. Number to call in is 515-602-9782. If you call through and you're waiting for a little bit, give me a few as I'm going through the slate. I will definitely get you through when I can. Lots to talk about. I do want to talk a little bit about this short slate we just had. Overtime is both a blessing sometimes and a rough thing. I was winning the 150 before overtime happened. Couldn't quite hold on. Congratulations to the real MC. Overtime definitely helped him. He had Rob Finnessy and Hanif Cheatham. So congrats, OT helped you. I had to settle for second, I guess, but I'll take it. What a huge game. I have to give Rob a hard time because, he doesn't really play too much anymore. He's doing a sports betting thing. But earlier this season, and when he visited Seattle on a work trip, we talked, and he said that Trace Jackson Davis would absolutely be an overrated bust. He really answered the call today. He had 25, 15, 3 blocks of steal and 2 assists with a double-double, 55.75 on DraftKings. He looks every bit as good as people said he would be. A lot happened today. I don't want to dwell too much on this. Let's go ahead and push through my partner in crime tonight. Razzle, how you doing, man?
Good, good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. No, it looks like you had a pretty decent slate. I know that you had been kind of ailing this week and getting down on yourself, but you did good today. Did the overtime help you at all, or did it hurt you?
It might have ended up just staying the same or maybe hurting me. I don't know. The big stat correction at the end, I don't know if that – I don't know. Can't really tell with how big of a stat correction that actually went down. But, yeah, it was a pretty good slate over here.
Yeah, it was. I think Cheatham lost a couple points. Thor lost a couple points, and then Justin Smith got credit for his double double. They shorted him a rebound, so I ended up only losing 1 point because I had Thor, so I lost the 4 points. But Justin Smith got his rebound in the double double, so that made up for it for me. And I actually got second in the 150 instead of third, so it was a pretty massive stat correction. I don't know how they got so out of whack, but whatever. Big slate tomorrow. DraftKings has. Was it 8 games? And then FanDuel has one additional game that is not on DraftKings, I guess, just to be a little different with their 8. They have Alabama versus Penn State on there, so we will cover that as well. I'd say this is probably the best slate we've had up to date, and I'm happy that for the first non-football Saturday that they did this. It seems like the pricing, especially on DraftKings, and from what I see a little bit, I looked at FanDuel, they made it extra soft. And then also, I see you tweeted a picture out that FanDuel, they're doing late swap now for college basketball. Is that what's happening?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't see really any announcement about it or anything. I just happened to look at the slate, and they obviously put it in parentheses after the slate of games. It's nice. It'll come in handy with the 4-hour difference between the first game tip-off and then the Auburn game. But hopefully they keep it because, what was it, a couple Saturdays ago or Sundays ago, that like it was 8 hours difference between tip times from the first and last game on the slate. And with our, you know, the ability to not get information as far as suspensions or injuries in college basketball, it made things a little difficult to deal with on FanDuel.
Yeah, that's going to be nice. I see that for somebody said they still don't have it on for NBA, but the NBA is required to do what those early lineups now, so maybe it doesn't matter. But that's definitely going to be huge for college basketball. Want to give one of our listeners a special shout out, Scott TSU4. He had a great night as well tonight. He whined a lot and he tilts a lot, but you know we love him for it. So congrats to Scott on this big night tonight. Coming home on a work trip, so he's been with the show since the beginning, so very, very happy to have him around. Let's get right into the slate here and talk about the first game. So it's kind of going to start off with a game where it's going to be a fun one to watch, and I don't think that a ton of people maybe will have a lot of exposure necessarily, and then it looks like the middle games are going to be heat, and then it kind of cools off at the end. So the first one here is Oregon versus Michigan. KenPom has it 70-67 in favor of Michigan here. Michigan coming off a rather disappointing game. Their 158th tempo ranking, Oregon 304th. Now, I know it's already been confirmed for Oregon that they will be without Shakir Justin. I know he's out. And then even though Enfali Dante is supposed to be back soon, he will not be eligible for this game just yet. So they're down a couple of big men. The price on DraftKings, I don't know that we'll need him, and it's not a great spot for him, but ordinarily if we were lacking value, it would be great. It would be C.J. Walker, who is 4K. He came coming off the game against Hawaii where he had 18-2-1. He did get in some foul trouble, but he played 22 minutes at 4K and had 24.5. So the price does not increase at all. If I'm running multiple lineups, I think I definitely want exposure to him. And ordinarily, we're going to get to the next game when we talk about Syracuse. I think that Walker would be probably a really popular value play at 4K. But with the news that we just got today about Georgetown, I don't know that we're really necessarily going to need to take Walker. Pritchard's always there. He's 8-4. He's, you know, a good play. I used Chris Duarte for the first time ever last late in Hawaii, and I can't say I was very impressed. I've seen him on TV knocking down shots, and I thought his game was good, but actually watching him against Hawaii, I really wasn't impressed with him at all. So I don't think I'd be using anyone really on Oregon today except for C.J. Walker at the 4K. For Michigan, some of these prices are pretty nice for them. Teske at 8-2, Simpson at 8-2. We both know that their floors usually hover around 30, 32 fantasy points. They've had a couple games under, but that's generally what you can expect for them at home. Franz Wagner just drops from 5K back down to 4-5. So, again, he might ordinarily look like a juicy, you know, value play because that's a good price for him, but I just don't think that we're going to have to really necessarily roster him with this next game. But with that being said, everyone's going to jump off of the Wagner train, and he's probably going to have, like, his best game ever tomorrow and drop 30 fantasy points, and everybody's going to be tilted. So with that being said, I think I have to get exposure to him as well. What are you going to be doing with this game? Because this is going to be one of those ones where I think it's a really nice, you know, non-fantasy basketball game to watch, but I just don't feel like I want a ton of exposure to it.
Yeah, I don't – I mean, I'm going to probably be – I don't know, well above the field with C.J. Walker. Michigan's kind of been giving it up on the interior of late. You know, part of that is, you know, they've dealt with Cockburn and then Garza and Wara and, you know, Enoch and Willie Williams and then Gonzaga prior to that. So, you know, they've kind of been getting beat up by guys on the interior. So I think pretty highly of C.J. Walker tomorrow. But aside from that, I don't know that I really want much from this game. Even with Justin out, like, I would think Duarte has to do a little more rebounding and stuff, but I don't know. I'm kind of with you. I'll probably prefer to just watch it and look to attack other games.
Yeah, and I mean, that's part of the reason that put me on Duarte last game was, you know, I had Walker also, but with Houston was out in that Hawaii game, and he just did a lot of standing around. So he's going to have to play a lot better, but his price would have to come down for me to even consider him. So I think we're in agreement, Walker. And I personally still think for tournaments, especially Wagner is still in play. I have him in Dynasty, and I'm not giving up on him. I think that had he played from day one, he would be much better than what he looks right now. And people are, especially in the fantasy realm, very quick to dismiss a guy as not being good after just a couple games, and that's really not going to be the case with him. It may not be immediately, but he's going to be a solid 6-7K guy eventually down the road. All right, next game, Syracuse versus Georgetown. This is one that I am going to be zoning in on pretty heavily, and I expect most people to. KenPom has it 75-71 for Georgetown. Surprising me a little bit, but I don't actually think that'll be the case. I think Syracuse will win this game. KenPom, tempo rankings 36 for Georgetown, 203 for Syracuse. Now, Georgetown just had some news today. They had two more players that were accused in that, sexual assault situation. Miriam Gardner and Galen Alexander, one's a junior, one's a freshman. They have both decided to transfer out of the program. So that's going to leave Georgetown even lower on guys. I think that they have had, they got seven players on scholarship right now that have played and one on scholarship that hasn't played. So that makes me feel a lot better about using a guy like Omer, year seven, who I would probably fade. Especially against Syracuse zone, maybe not as bad, but he's just been a very scary foul guy, 5 fouls per 40. He's going to have to play through the foul problems one way or another, unless they're going to play walk-ons. So, I'm looking at McClung, obviously. He's still not priced up. He's 5'9". I think he's going to see heavy ownership on him. Terrell Allen is there at 4'2". That's still probably too cheap for him, even though his rates aren't that great. But since he stepped into the starting lineup and there's no one really to sub out for him, he's still a good play. And then you're at 7 there at 8'3". I think that you can still pay that price for him and feel pretty good about it. Syracuse hasn't been that good down low at all. And their guy's getting a lot of foul trouble. You could even look at like Jagan Mosley if you want to, or Jamerco Pickett, Javon Blair, or Cutis Wahab. All those guys are basically in play because they're just, there's no one to sub for them. And they may even have to go deep down into the bench with George Mirasan down there at 3K. So if you're feeling real frisky, you can throw him into a tournament probably. On the Syracuse side, I absolutely love Elijah Hughes, as always. His price is at 8.6, so he's a premier price, but the rest of Syracuse is pretty cheap. And I think that with that value, you can fit him and kind of build your lineups around him. Gerard, my guy Joe Gerard, is still only 5'9". Anytime he's under 6K in most matchups, I'm going to be rostering him, so I will be rostering him with Hughes tomorrow. Boeheim is a guy I don't usually like to take, but I think he's definitely in play. And then I kind of feel like I wish he was cheaper, like the days when he was 4'7", Marek Dolice. He's 6K.
Whoa, what's going on over there?
He was 6K, and it's somebody who, you can look at for tournaments. And then Quincy Guerrier at 4-4 is also in play in this matchup. He didn't see as many minutes last game as he had been trending against Georgia Tech. He only had 12 because he fouled out. 12 minutes. So that could be a risk on the road, with the freshman maybe not controlling himself. But Hughes, Gerard, and definitely McClung, Allen, and probably year 7. So it almost looks like 5 on a main roster for me in this game. What are you doing with this one?
I don't think I'm going to go with, 5 guys from this game in a main, but, they all make sense. I'm probably going to have a lot more Javon Blair than the field just because I'm just always going to take 3-point shooters against Syracuse and just hope, somebody gets hot. I was all over Jordan Bohannon in that game, and he started out terribly and then, ended up making a few shots and getting there. But he took double-digit threes. So, it's obviously McClung, right? Like, everybody should start at least their cash lineups right there. The ball's in his hand so much more now. He's going to pick up assists, and, he's somebody that could easily take double-digit threes in this game too. Hughes is always in play, and then I have to decide between Gerard and Boeheim. I probably won't play both of them together. Like, I have to dig in a little bit more, but one or the other makes a ton of sense to me.
Sounds good. Yeah, I, over the years, I've just had a ton of success with, especially in my main lineup, with stacking. I have gotten a little bit away from that this year, and my results have, you know, I've had slates where I've just been super ham, and then other slates where I'm just kind of scratching my head wondering what the hell happened. So I've really made a point, or try it when I can, to get back to game stacking. And one of my best slates was the Auburn slate, like last week. I know I got overtime, I got bailed out a little bit. But I had, I think it was four from that game for sure. And I don't know, it's just one of those strategies that when I have a really good read on a game, I want all the exposure to it. And a lot of people think in basketball that you hurt yourself when you do that, but that's not necessarily always true. I do think taking Gerard and Boeheim together is probably not the play. But Hughes with Gerard is just a strong starting point for me, especially if you're going to run it back with McClung. And I will have Allen at 4-2. Your 7 is the only one, I think, at 8-3 that maybe you can, you know, get away from him and try to get somebody else in that range if you want exposure to a different game. Like when we get to Seton Hall, they've got a guy down. But I really don't think you can go wrong with anybody in this game. And if you're running multiple lineups and running game stacks in tournaments, you're certainly going to want to have that one. UCLA versus Notre Dame. KenPom has this one 72-64 in favor of Notre Dame. They're in 198th in tempo ranking, UCLA 280th. I guess, man, who's for real is Jamie Jacquez Jr., who is still stupidly priced on both sites. He's three of his last four, he's been over 30 fantasy points. Still only priced at 4-6. Kind of seems like he's become a favorite there in UCLA, and they've kind of kicked what is it, Chris Smith to the side a little bit. He did take Chris Smith's starting spot. I really liked Chris Smith coming into the year, but you know he's just a non-factor now. He's playing roughly about 20 minutes, and Jacquez is just completely tearing it up. I haven't been that impressed like I thought I would with Tiger Campbell. Prince Ali is kind of, you know, he's hit or miss, hurt a lot. Jalen Hill is just not playing up to par. Cody Riley's good. So it's really kind of that spot's been there for Jacquez to step up, and he's really taking a ton of shots, contributing steals, rebounds, assists. This is another guy that's under 5K that I think will be popular, and there's so many sub-5K guys on this slate. It's going to be a high-scoring slate. I think the room for mistakes is going to be very, very small. So I think Jacquez is a guy that you just plug him in. This is a good matchup. I mean, it's on the road, but at 4-6 for a guy that's playing this kind of minutes and getting this kind of usage, and clearly Cronin likes, on a very inexperienced team, I'm going with him. I also like Riley a little bit at 5-9, but this feels like a matchup on the road where he's going to get tagged with fouls, and I just really have had my fill with the guys on the road getting fouls. My man John Mooney is there at 8-8 for Notre Dame. He's strictly a tournament play. I missed the days when he was like 6 and 7K on DraftKings old prices. Super chalk player Rex Pfluger, who against better competition doesn't seem to do quite as well. I don't think I'll be using him. Probably won't be using Prentice Hub. TJ Gibbs is there at 6'5". It's just, you know, nobody on Notre Dame really excites me that much. Maybe, you know, a little bit of good win here in the tournaments, but it's really just in this game for me, Jacquez. What do you think here?
It's going to be Jacquez, who I'm still really disappointed the fact that I kept skipping over him in Dynasty Draft. He was on my short list, and I kept putting him off thinking that I could probably get him at the end, and somebody snuck in and swiped him. And then, obviously, always have to think about Mooney. I can't figure out what to do with Jalen Hill and Cody Riley. There's just no consistency between the two. But obviously there's, you know, foul issues, like you said. Dane Goodwin was on fire last game. Might be somebody I have to look at just for his three-point shooting and such. But other than that, yeah, I don't see a lot that I'm going to be on just because the obvious build right now is Stars and Scrubs, right? Like, we've talked about so much value and we're only three games in. So it's just a matter of fitting the right studs with those cheap value plays.
Yeah, absolutely. There's Exactly. There's already four guys under 5K that are super strong, like can run in your main team and feel good about it. But looking at the top, you know, there's not even really that big of studs on this particular slate. Like Powell is only 8'4", he was 8'6". It's just, you know, there's not like the 10K Zion Williamsons of last year. It's just kind of different the way they're pricing now. Looking at Notre Dame, John Mooney draws about 4.5 fouls per 40. Juwan Durham draws about 4.6 per 40. The guards don't really do a whole lot of drawing fouls, but those two guys down low, you know, being guarded by Hill, being guarded by Riley, it doesn't look too appeasing to me. I think it's more of a risk than you really need to take when there's much safer options on this particular slate. All right, Memphis versus Tennessee. Another one that I'm excited to actually watch, but I don't know that I want a ton of it for fantasy purposes. KenPom has a 74-68 in favor of Tennessee. They're 303rd tempo ranking, super slow, and Memphis is 10th in tempo this year, super fast. Memphis will still be, of course, without James Wiseman. DJ Jeffries and Precious Achiuwa have been the main benefactors. Obviously, Precious Achiuwa has been just an absolute monster. He has had three games of 30 and a game of 50. And then 230s before that 50 as well, since Wiseman's been out. So he's been loving life. I like him as a tournament play. I don't think many people will have him. Tennessee is a tough on defense squad, so I don't necessarily think that he's a safe play to run in your main, but I like his upside. DJ Jeffries fouls way entirely too much. I have him on my dynasty league, and some days I'm happy, and other days I look at the box score and I see he's got 3 fouls in 11 minutes. So that is very scary for me to use him at the 6-1 tag. He does have 4 fouls called per 40, which isn't a super high number, but I bet if we broke that down more since Wiseman's been out, it's a lot higher. Also, Lester Quinones is still out for Memphis, so Boogie Ellis and Alex Lomax have been, you know, in play for us. But there's no one really on Memphis that I feel is super mispriced or would take precedence over the Syracuse, Georgetown guys or Jacquez or, you know, even Miles Powell, who we're going to get to in a minute. For Tennessee, Monte Turner has been having a great year at 8-1. It's really weird seeing East Pons at 7-3 when he was like 3-7 last year and just absolutely awful, always got in foul trouble. So I still have a hard time grasping he's playing well. I won't pay 7-3 for him. I don't think I've rostered him once this year. It really hasn't hurt me too bad, but he's been putting up good numbers. And again, no one is really priced that well for Tennessee. The guy I'm always watching is Josiah Jordan James. I really like him. His price is up to 5-2 now. He doesn't really hit more than 20, unfortunately, and that's because the shots haven't really been falling. He's starting to take more shots recently, which is nice, but he's always contributing in rebounds. He actually averages 7 rebounds a game. He's been turning it over a high number of times lately as well. So this isn't a game I want to use him at 5-2, but he is a guy that's eternally on my watch list just because there will be a matchup that comes up in a spot where he slips to like 4-6, 4-7, and I'm going to be all in. Memphis-Tennessee, another fun game, but what are you doing for fantasy with this one?
Probably staying right at the top with Turner and Achiuwa. I'm going to be a lot, I guess, higher on Achiuwa in this game than you probably are. I just think he's super safe for cash games right now. And I just don't know if Tennessee has the body to deal with him on the boards. So I kind of look for him to be a pretty safe, solid option. And then I probably will have a share, too, of Lomax in GPPs just because he can approach 6X at that price point. To kind of give me a differentiator, especially when I build some balanced lineups to counteract all the stars and scrubs that I plan on using.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, one thing Tennessee does really well is rebound, keep people off the offensive glass. So that would be, I guess, my only real concern. Josiah Jordan James has a 20% defense rebounding rate. Oliver Nakamura, when he comes off the bench, has 17%. But Bowden has a 16% as a guard. Palms right around 13%. So as a team, Tennessee does really, really well in the glass. So I guess it really just depends on, foul trouble for those guys and you know, how, I guess, attacking Precious is when other guys are taking the shots and him crashing the glass. Because I definitely don't mind him, but I don't know that I would see playing him over, you know, a couple hundred more Miles Powell. And especially with the total, which I don't necessarily always get sucked into, oh, their total says this, I can't play him. But yeah, I see him more as a tournament play. That's fine. I definitely like him. Seton Hall versus Rutgers.
I mean,
Ken Pom. Oh, go ahead.
I just, you know, the follow rate of Nacua and then Fulkerson, you know, they combined for 10 falls called per 40. You know, I think they have some troubles with him. And, you know, maybe they do end up doing a good job of team rebounding. You know, but I still, like, I mean, the way he's grabbing rebounds right now is at a pretty elite clip. You know, he's grabbing, what, almost 36% of the rebounds. And he draws over 7 fouls per 40 as well. So I just think he's got a pretty safe floor in the low to mid-30s for sure in this spot.
Yeah. His rebounding rate has excelled so much since Wiseman sat down. Wiseman had, like, almost 40. I don't have it pulled up. I think it was, like, 45, 43, something like that combined. And Precious has really stepped up. I think last I looked at, like you just said, 35 or 36. So he's been impressive.
Yeah.
Wiseman
was over 47 combined.
That's just wild, man. Too bad he's not playing for this matchup. All right, let's move on to the Seton Hall game. KenPom has it 73-70, Seton Hall. They're 75th in tempo ranking. Rutgers is 144th. Seton Hall, right off the bat, they have lost for a while. After last game, I think it was a wrist injury for Sandro Mamukulashvili. So that's a huge, you know, presence for them defensively out of the lineup. And, a decent rebounder. He's not like an elite rebounder by any means, but he's a paint clogger, and he can shoot the ball. He can hit threes, and he actually shoots 43% from long range for a 6'11" guy. So he really stretches the floor out. So him being out is going to hurt Seton Hall. There's really no way around it. They looked pretty bad in the game against Ohio State. Iowa State, that they lost 76-66 when they had just beaten them the game before. As soon as Sandro went down with the injury, they were getting pummeled. Condit was in there doing whatever he wanted. Solomon Young was in there doing whatever he wanted. They could not stop anyone in the paint. They were getting out-rebounded, and everything was getting blocked. So it's really, really quite concerning, and especially when, you know, Romero Gill is probably going to pick up some extra minutes. He's a definitely guy that, you know, has an elite block rate, but he fouls all the time. I guess Roden is going to be relied upon to take more shots. Miles Kale, who I always get stuck into using him because he's always priced at like 4-3 and 4-4. His minutes seem to be there one game, and then the next they're not. And he's priced at 4-7, so I think I'll be able to get away from him. But Kale's going to have to step up and do more rebounding. Everyone's going to have to do something for them besides just Miles Powell chucking. Now, I do have I have had most of the year a personal rule where every time Miles Powell is under 8'5", which he still is, I've been plugging him in. So I'm going to have to make a decision between probably Hughes and him. I'm still leaning Hughes, but Powell is a guy that he's one of those safe options. He'll have, like, you know, 9 fantasy points, maybe 12, 13 minutes into the game. And I tilt hard. I mean, anyone that knows me knows I probably tilt more than anyone in the world. But Miles Powell is not one that I usually get excited about because I can turn off the TV, go for a walk, and by the time I've gotten back in the door, you know, a couple minutes later, you know, or whatever it was, he's up to 30. So I don't worry about Miles Powell at all. He's going to be taking a ton of shots. I don't really need to harp on him at all. Mainly, I think people just want to know who's going to take over this spot for Sandro. And my thoughts on it are that Roden and Gill will probably try to pick up the rebounding and the usage. Roden already seemed to be pushing Kale out a little bit. And then 2 games ago, Kale got a ton of more minutes. And then the second game against Iowa State, he still got the same minutes. But it was like all in the first half, and he lost minutes in the second. So I don't know. I always feel like Kale's a good play on paper, but his minutes worry me. So knowing what we know about Sandro being out and what we can deduce from Iowa State's front court absolutely dominating Seton Hall once he went out, that would tell me that Miles Johnson is going to be a good play. And then down there at 4K, Stony Brook grad transfer who seems to finally be figuring things out. You'll have to explain this one to me, Razzle. Akwazi Yeboah, he is priced at 4K. He picked up the start last game because he had been playing so well. You know, in the Michigan State game, and now he's dropped from 4,800 down to 4K after a 24.5 fantasy point game. This is another value option under 5K that I'm going to have him, you know, and this this is where I believe that C.J. Walker becomes contrarian, because now you've got Yeboah staring you in the face. You've got Jacquez under 5K. You've got Terrell Allen. You just have a shit ton of options under 5K that you can run four of them, feel great, and stack the rest. I don't know. DK's pricing's been really reactive, and normally you would think after 24 he'd jump up to like 5-2. So I don't understand the 4K price drop. Are you expecting him to be super chalk like I am, or you know, I don't think people are going to miss this one, right?
I mean, he should be super chalk. Whether he actually is, we don't really know. But he's basically the reason why I may not have much Terrell Allen. I just think your boy is kind of a better play overall. Like, he has a better built-in floor than Terrell Allen does. So, I mean, I'm going to be pretty high on him. I can't figure out the $800 price drop. He had an $800 price drop after the Pitt game because he put up 14, you know, which is expected. But realize he started out the season at 7,800. You know, he's put up monster games in the past, obviously, you know, much, much easier competition. But I think he's kind of getting his feet wet in major conference play now when he slid into the starting lineup. I believe the last two, I know the last one for sure, he started against Wisconsin. This is one that I'm definitely not going to pass on.
Yeah, no, that's one. There's a lot of people that I talk to that are super contrarian in nature, and they like to fade guys just because of percentages. This would be one to defeat the chalk on and not get cute. Because before his last two games, I haven't even made a comment on to my subs, and I just said, you know, I'm surprised he's not doing better because of how good he was at Stony Brook. And it should be only a matter of time before he starts figuring it out. And then against Michigan State, he started to figure it out, it seemed. I like him. I think Miles Johnson makes a really nice tournament play because there will be nobody on him at all. And he's already shown huge upside. And this is a matchup that he should do really well. All the Rutgers guys really took drops. Johnson dropped 400. Ron Harper dropped to 6-2. And then Baker, after having a near 40, dropped from 7-2 to 6-9. These are all guys I don't expect to be that owned. And if you're running a bunch of tournament lineups, you probably want to get yourself some Rutgers exposure outside of your boy, because there's just too much upside there under 7K for Geo Baker. I haven't really used him much this year, but I recognize how good he is. And I think him and Miles Powell could potentially get into a back-and-forth type of thing. And Ron Harper I have in one of my redraft leagues. I like him. The price drop would normally at 6-2 would be like a jump all over. But, again, this slate is so soft, it's just, you know, I don't know that I'll have any exposure to him, even though I do like him here. And then for Seton Hall, it's just Miles Powell for me. What are you going to be doing? You know, with Sandro out, are you gonna be flooding your, you know, GPP lineups with a bunch of Seton Hall combos? Or is there anybody that would make your main team besides the Miles Powell? What are you doing with them?
I think my Seton Hall exposure for the most part is gonna come on FanDuel. I just don't see it on DK, but you know, Powell is 8K over there, and then you go down and McKnight is 5,200. Kale, 4,500, which I don't think I'll use, but Gill at 4,400, Jared Roden's 4,400 over there. So I think I'm just going to save my exposure for over there and just kind of put in one of those, you know, probably between Gill and Roden down at 4,400 as a value play. You know, I guess even McKnight at 5,200 is usable, but I can't seem to get him right ever. I don't really see the need to do it on DK, at least right now.
Yeah, I would agree there. Looking at FanDuel prices on Geo Baker, they have him at 6K there too. I don't know, that just seems really low for him. I don't want to jump to the party late on Geo Baker though and get one of his crappy games.
Let's see, St. Louis versus Auburn. Ken Palm has it. Auburn 74. Total clash of styles. Auburn 94th in tempo. St. Louis 231st. St. Louis pretty much exactly like last year in terms of
nearly the same lineup construction and almost the same pace and style of play. They lost a few guys, but they got Jordan Goodwin back, who's really good. Hassan French, who was on the slate a couple weeks ago that we had, and he had foul trouble in the first half and ended up against Boston College still hitting 31 fantasy points. Before that, he had a 73, and then, you know, against Tulane, he had a 44. So this is a really talented 15 and 11 guy who most slates you'd be looking at pretty heavily. Auburn does not scare me in the interior. I know a lot of people get worried about them because the KenPom numbers show Auburn being really good in the paint. But if you watch the games or you look back at game logs, interior guys have actually had pretty nice games against Auburn. And it's been a bit of an edge for me, you know, using big men like him against Auburn because most people won't do it. I'm saying I will tomorrow just because of the makeup of the slate, but I think French makes a really nice tournament play where people just are going to automatically assume this is a bad spot for him. Fouls are obviously always a risk, too. For Auburn, Isaac Okoro is there at 6'6". He's always a good play. Austin Wiley at 6'7". Gone are the days where Wiley was, you know, 4'5 and 4'4". He's had three straight games of 30-plus fantasy points, and we've said it from the beginning, if he can stay out of foul trouble and get minutes, you know, if he gets over 20 minutes in a game, he's going to just shatter whatever price he has ordinarily. This is a really hard ask at 6'7". I know I just acquired him from Razzle here in our Dynasty League, so I'm excited for him, but I won't be using him tomorrow at 6'7" at this price. Not in this matchup, at least, in this slow pace, even though Auburn, you know, there's going to be lots of opportunities. I just worry that he and French are going to be kind of having a boxing match, and they're going to get into foul troubles. McCormick's there at 7K, Gowdy at 7.9. They're always, you know, nice tourney guys. McCormick has been a nice cash play for me recently, but again, this just isn't a matchup I think I want to pursue them. Gowdy's come back down to earth a little bit. You see after a couple 30s, he had the 15 against Furman. And then, you know, going back into that earlier part of the season where he had 25 and 26, I think that's more of who Samir Gowdy is. He was playing a little bit above his head. In my opinion, still a really good player. I like him. I like Auburn, but I don't think he's an 8-5 guy. You know, he needs to come back down to like 7-7-3 at the most. He's just I don't foresee paying 8-5 for him, and I don't see him dropping 40 plus that regularly. I think that's it. Who do you like here?
I mean, I'll definitely get exposure to both French and Goodwin. More so Goodwin, obviously, but, you know, if French is able to get Wiley into foul trouble, you know, that can be a pretty big thing. And we obviously seen his upside in, you know, in a 5-point game against Belmont where he still, you know, went for 73.5 fantasy points and the team only scored 60 overall. So, that upside is going to be hard to ignore. And obviously those two guys fit perfectly with the Stars and Scrubs approach for this slate with all the value. But I can't get the Auburn forwards right when I play them, other than Wiley recently, just because of his massive per-minute ability. I can't get on Okoro or Priyopoy or McLemore when they do anything. I may end up not using too many of them. I mean, I think Macklemore's kind of priced out of being usable at 5,100. And, you know, Purifoy can get there, but I think he's close to being priced at a ceiling as well. Like, I can't see him putting up much more than 29 to 30. And when, you know, you're priced at your 5X ceiling, that makes it kind of tough for GPP purposes.
Yeah, Purifoy is a guy who it seems like every slate, he rattles off a quick, like, 8 to 12 fantasy points early, and then he just disappears for a while. And then he'll hit a couple threes, and then he'll eke out 20. But I feel like every time I'm trying to fade Purifoy, he gets real fast, like 2X, and dies, and when I got him, I'm feeling good about the 2X, and then dies, and I'm feeling bad about it. So, yeah, I don't really like him priced at the 5A either. It feels like all of Auburn is priced, you know, pretty fairly, maybe even a little bit higher than they should be. I really like Okoro, but I'm not – that's this. We're paying almost the absolute highest. This is the highest he's ever been, and we're paying for You know, he can break the 5X mark on this price. He's shown it before, but I don't think he's hitting that as quite as often in this matchup. So it really makes it hard to roster anyone on Auburn for this. And French, like I said, the only concern with him is fouls, but like he showed against Boston College, he sat most of the first half and still hit 31 fantasy points in the game. So a really tough one, interesting. I think that could potentially be a GPP winner because I don't know if people know what they're doing with that game quite yet. Xavier versus Wake Forest. This is another one that I think I like a little bit more than maybe the field will, just because I've been a Xavier fan and I've had a lot of success targeting and using Wake Forest players in DFS. KenPom has a 72-69 in favor of Xavier. They're 152nd Tempo ranking. Wake Forest 105. Xavier, Najee Marshall, you know, he's just been an absolute workhorse this year. Again, since he had that 58 fantasy point game because he had 5 steals, 31-8. He's got that in his bag, but he's also got games of, you know, 15-20 in his bag too. So he has a really wide range of outcomes at the 7-8. Love him for tournaments. Love him for, you know, I got him in a couple of my fantasy leagues, but I won't be paying the tag for him, even though I like this matchup on the road against Wake. My concern is that he maybe doesn't have, he seems to get up, like that Cincy game, he was up. Like he was really fighting, going for loose balls. And then when they play other teams that maybe aren't on their talent level, he seems to take plays off. That's just, in the 3 games I've watched Xavier, that's really my observation on Najee. I love him as a player, but it really seems like he takes plays off when they're playing competition, maybe not quite as good as them. My dude Jason Carter, priced at 5-1, probably can't use him there. His price needs to come back down to the, like, 4-5, 4-8 level. I don't know if it will, but he really should. He hasn't really been looking that good recently, so hopefully they'll continue to drop his price unless he goes off tomorrow. Quentin Gooden is always there. He's actually starting to show that he's not just a shallow, you know, carcass of a shell of himself, I guess. Still playing 35-plus minutes. 3 of his last 4 games have been over 20 fantasy points, so he's got the, you know, near 5X in his bag. He turns it over a lot, which typically kills him on FanDuel. But I think he's starting to figure things out. The fact that he had 26 against Cincinnati in 37 minutes kind of got me back on him again. So I'll definitely be potentially using him somewhere tomorrow, but no, I don't think he'll be in my main lineups. One guy that I'm excited about for the future is Kai Tandy. I don't think we can use him yet. I did try to use him recently, and it didn't work, but he's going to be a big-time scorer for them down the road. Maybe not this year, but a name to keep an eye on. I won't be surprised to see him have some big games. For Wake Forest, I'm almost never using Brandon Childress anymore. He's got games where he'll shoot a ton and get some steals in like that 44 fantasy point game against NC State. But then he's got games where I'd throw out the Penn State game where he got 2, where he just won't shoot in the end of games. And he'll, like, he had a game against Charleston where he shot 2 of 7. I'm still at 30 fantasy points, but it's just like sometimes he also takes plays off. And I don't know. Playing for Danny Manning must be a very stressful thing on anyone's psyche. And he's just the guy that frustrates me. Oliver Saar is a guy that I absolutely love. He's at the absolute pinnacle of his price now at 7-4, so we can't use him, unfortunately. He was priced down just last month at 4-7, and then jumped to 6-3 and 6-4, and I had been using him slate after slate after slate, and people were a little bit late to the party because he wasn't starting, and he was coming off the bench, and he had foul issues and all this shit about him. And it was a very nice profit of the time, and I was not, as my friend Scott would say, I was not sorry about rostering him. And I don't know, man, I really like him. I think I may still have him somewhere in the tournament just because I was leading the charge on him, and I can't jump off just yet, even though that price is way too high. You know, you got Torrey Johnson down there at 3-8. He's been a usable value guy, but with the value that is on the slate, that's more of a slam dunk. Probably don't need to use him. And then the only other guy, Isaiah Mucius, who's at 4-5, he's been a fairly usable value guy as well. I just keep coming back to the other games, though, like Georgetown and Syracuse when I'm talking about these games. This seems like a nice fantasy-friendly game on paper, but everyone's priced right. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. It's like with everybody being priced right or slightly too high, like I'm not as in love with the game as I felt like I should be. Saar is only 6,200 on FanDuel. So for me, like, he's gone, at that price, he's gone 4X plus every game since the first two. So since the 13th of November, every game has been basically 4X plus that price point, with a high approaching 6X. So I'll get my exposure to him over there, just in case, just because I don't want to pay that $7,400 on DK. Probably save my Tyreek Jones exposure for FanDuel for tournaments. $6,700 over there. And then probably Marshall is about the only guy I'll use from this game on DK, I think. Maybe Gooden, but again, we don't need another 4K player. But yeah, I would have thought before looking at prices and everything that I would have been on a few players from this game, but I just don't like the price points.
Yeah, I agree with you there. All right, while we're talking FanDuel, let's stay on the game that is FanDuel only, Alabama versus Penn State. KenPom has it 83-72 in favor of Penn State. They're 42nd in the ranking, Alabama 12th. So this will be a fast one, one we definitely want to be looking at. You know, Watkins has been an absolute revelation. When he's not in foul trouble or having, you know, it's pretty well documented that he's had some mental stuff, and you can tell when he's not involved in the game or something's bothering him. I tend to throw out Ohio State games and don't hold them against people this year because Ohio State is clearly on another level defensively than I think almost anyone is in college right now. So I don't really necessarily look at that and say, oh, well, watch out. But, you know, since the Yale game, he's just been crushing. Syracuse, he had 44. Wake Forest, 43. You know, even Maryland, he had the 15-11 double-double. Alabama doesn't scare me at all, you know, in their interior. He is priced at 7-7, but between, you know, with Lamar Stevens at 7-6, you would think that's going to be more if you're doing, you know, cash games even exist on FanDuel anymore. But Stevens always more of that safe floor guy, and Watkins being the tournament play. But their price is similar now, and Watkins rarely seems to ever get rostered, especially when their games are on DraftKings. So I like Watkins quite a bit. As I mentioned, Alabama they haven't scared me at all. Looking back at some of the stat lines that people have had, this was a game where Armando Obeko had 12 and 15, I believe, against them. Garrison Brooks had 20 and 7 against them. That's just one game. Let's see. Let's pull up the Iowa State game when they gave up 104 points. Let's see. Condit had 13 and 4 blocks. Solomon Young had 9 points. So I mean, there's big guys having good games, and they're just giving up a lot of points. Even, you know, they played that game against Stephen F. Austin, and they actually played Kinsmill well, which I thought Kinsmill would crush him there. So that was a foul trouble type of game for Stephen F. Austin. But I really like the Penn State bigs in this game. One guy I used on DraftKings a couple days ago when Penn State was on the slate was Isaiah Brockington. He's a guy on the way up I really like. He had a really nice game at low ownership for us as a value guy. He comes off the bench, but you see he played 25 minutes against Maryland, had 14-3-1. We're helped by a block and 3 steals. We can't always count on that, but you look at his steals, he's been doing quite well in that category. And he's been hitting 5X, was it two out of the last three? And 20 or more fantasy points in 4 of his last 6 on FanDuel. So I like him there at 5K. Pace up game. Mirian Jones is there at 5-7. He's been killing it. Miles Dredd kind of showed himself back from the dead a little bit in the first half of the last game and then disappeared again. So he's down there at 4-6 if you really want to go contrarian. And then for Alabama, we know, you know, Kira Lewis and John Petty are their guys. Jaden Shackelford has a nice future there at 4-8. He's always been playing, I think, in tournaments. Javian Davis at 4-5 is an up-and-coming young guy. And then everyone's favorite value tilt, Herbert Jones, down there at 4-4. I don't know what to do with him, man. Every time he's been an auto plug for value for us, he gets into foul trouble or he bricks layups. And there's really no other mode for him besides bricking layups and fouling. What am I asking you? Are you going to be using him at all on FanDuel? And then who else in this game is kind of, you know, catching your eye?
I will have 0 Herbert Jones, which means he probably goes for 30 now, finally. But I've watched him brick too many layups, and now I have a feeling that Mike Watkins is just going to block seven shots in this at the rim. You know, one of the things I noticed KenPom wise, you know, Alabama gets their shots blocked almost at a 12% rate. You know, which is one of the 40 lowest teams or 40 highest teams in the country as far as getting their shots blocked. And then obviously a super high turnover rate for Alabama as well. So, you know, I like Watkins to pick up a lot of those blocks and steals. So for me, really, this game is mostly about Penn State. Some Petty, just because of his ability to get absolutely hot from outside. But that's pretty much it. I like Jaden Shackelford, but I seem to use him in games where he goes 1-for-12 from the field coming off the bench. And normally I'd like Javion Davis a little bit, but I think he's going to have some problems with Watkins and even Stevens in the on the interior when he does try to drive and do everything. So definitely mostly just Penn State in this one for me.
Yeah, and looking at a couple of things, Lamar Stevens has a near 3% steal rate and a 3.5% block rate. Mike Watkins scores 17% block rate, 3% steal rate. And then my dude Isaiah Brockington has a 3.5% steal rate. Jamari Wheeler, of all people, has a 4.5% steal rate. So there's going to be a lot. You know, I always have this discussion with a buddy of mine how he says he's on the fence of it's too hard to project blocks and steals. And, yeah, maybe like a specific number, but we can look at that, and we can look at Alabama and the fact that they turn it over a ton, they get it stolen from at a very high clip, they get their shot blocked at a high clip, as you already mentioned, and you can come over and see these individual guys who excel at those categories. And it doesn't, you know, we might not be able to say that, hey, Mike Watkins is going to get, you know, five blocks, but I think I would bet a lot of money on him getting at least two blocks, you know, at worst. And probably two steals at worst in this game. I feel pretty confident in that. So, and you know, it is tough to maybe project those categories, but you can look at it and make a pretty, you know, safe assumption that they're going to be, you know, producing in those categories. And this might be one of the last games we get Brockington that cheap. With the way DraftKings is pricing, if Brockington goes off tomorrow, he's probably going to come back on the DraftKings slate and be 6K. So I think I might need to get exposure to him tomorrow just in case. This is the last time I'm able to do so. Last game on this particular slate, it's not on FanDuel, Georgia Tech versus Kentucky. KenPom has it 75-61 in favor of Kentucky, 182nd in tempo ranking, Georgia Tech 68th. So Kentucky, the joke's been that, you know, Kentucky's just playing all these cupcakes lately, and they have. They've been struggling a bit with them. But, you know, the last couple of games, they've really taken care of business after that embarrassing loss to Evansville. And now they're finally having to play a team that, you know, is decent, that is above those lower tier, but it's still not a very good team. You know, Hagans at 7-7 is a hell no for me. You know, I barely like playing him when he's 5K, let alone 7-7. I know he's been hitting 34 and 35, but again, he's been playing some patsies a lot. And I find it very hard for him to get much more than 28 to 30, and that's with his shot falling. Nick Richards' price has come up to 7-5 because, you know, he's also been killing. I still think he's going to hit, you know, 28 to 32 in this particular matchup in a very high amount of times, but I don't want to pay that price for him just to hit that marker. And I'm rarely ever using Tyrese Maxey. So where I would go in this game is most likely E.J. Montgomery, who's priced at 6K. He's coming off the 40 fantasy point game against Fairleigh Dickinson, and before that against UAB, he had 30. So he's, you know, starting to look healthy. Nate Sestina is going to be out for a while, so that's a big chunk of minutes. That was a starter minutes, you know, gone, and Montgomery now back healthy is getting that. The big thing on Montgomery has been for, you know, last 2 years, can he stay out of foul trouble? He's still getting fouls, but he's been able to actually be in games, you know. And again, he's playing teams that just weren't really drawing that many fouls, so he has been on the floor. You know, that 25-9 game against Fairleigh Dickinson, where he had 16 shot attempts, is really appealing. So at 6K, I'm looking at him most out of any of the Kentucky players. When we look at Georgia Tech and what they do well, we know James Banks is there. Michael Devo has been breaking out this year. Even though they have James Banks, their rebounding is really bad. They're, you know, bottom half of the NCAA in offensive rebounding and defensive rebounding. They turn the ball over a ton. They get stolen from a ton. They block shots because of Banks, but their offense is just really more about volume and not efficiency. So Banks, you know, gets a lot of putbacks. Devo just chucks and chucks. Parham, who came over from VMI and was a deadly three-point shooter, he can't make anything. They're just not – they're not doing well at all. There's going to be a ton of rebounds in this game and a lot of you know, rejections at the rim and a lot of the paint being clogged. So that makes me really like Montgomery even more because looking at his efficiency ratings, you know, he's right around a 29% combined rebounding rate and an 8% block rate and a 29% shot rate. So they're definitely looking to him when he's in, and even Nick Richards is deferring to him a little bit, it even seems. So they're really making a point to get E.J. Montgomery the ball. So he is definitely my favorite Kentucky play. Georgia Tech. You know, Devo's 8'3", Banks is 8K. I can't envision paying that price for either of them. Moses Wright at 6'3" is probably a no-fly zone. He's coming off three straight games of 30 fantasy points. If you look back at the game there on the 25th, he had 10 fantasy points. He definitely has that in his bag and can disappear. And then Khalid Moore at 5'5" is another guy who's got, you know, 25-plus upside, but you're getting 10 to 15 more than you're getting that 25 to 30 from him. Alvarado is still out, I believe. So Bubba Barham will still get minutes. I've been very, very disappointed in him. I was really expecting him to just jump out and play extremely well right away because he showed last year, even against good competition, he could do it. As a matter of fact, last year on Kentucky's floor, when he was a member of VMI, he hit something like awesome comeback and pulled up here. He hit an amazing amount of threes against them. Let me look this up real quick. Bear with me. Let's see, because he was, like, obviously their number one scorer against for VMI. So let me see. Kentucky game. Okay, they lost 92-82, so they were giving it to him. He hit 10 triples, 10 for 16 against Kentucky, 35 points. He just caught fire and just could not miss. So I know that doesn't really mean a whole hell of a lot in this game, but keep in mind that, you know, he did go off against them before. So maybe a little tourney exposure to my guy, Bubba Parham. Also for Georgia Tech, Christian Sulin left the team. He entered the transfer portal. That was one of Razzle's guys, hashtag Razzle's guys. So Georgia Tech, not that appealing in this game. What are you doing here? The take-home game, the hammer.
I'm not sure what to do. Like, there's going to be fouls on the interior, right, with Banks, Wright, Richards, and Montgomery. So it's a matter of trying to figure out fouls, but the problem is fouls at the college level are impossible to figure out. And I have to figure out why Banks hasn't started. I think it's the last two games. It's the last game for sure, but I don't know. Like, I'm probably going to be with you on Montgomery, and then I'll probably have some exposure to Moses Wright. Just because Wright's taking more and more shots. I don't know if that's come with the fact that Banks has come off the bench as well or what, you know, but Moses Wright's taken 39 shots over the last three games while Banks has taken just 18. That's probably where I'm going to go, but, I mean, I guess he can always play DeVoe for GPP purposes and just hope he gets hot, you know, like he did against Nebraska, but I don't really like the prices overall on most of this game. I think Hagans probably has a strong game, but at 7,700, like, I don't know that he bypasses 5X at that price, you know, more than twice a season, and he's already done it once, right? And that was against mm-hmm. Utah Valley. So I don't know. You know, the nice thing is he's an elite free throw shooter. So if he can get to the foul line from attacking and driving and picking up fouls on, like, Banks and Wright and Moore and stuff, then sure. But, you know, his assist rate is pretty elite right now, so that always helps. But I guess I'll have to dig into more on the Georgia Tech turnover just to see if we can kind of look to get a couple of steals out of him as well. But, yeah, I'm not excited to buy this game.
Yeah, it looks like against Nebraska, you're right. Banks came off the bench for Evan Cole, and then the game against Syracuse,
Banks was reinserted into the starting lineup over Evan Cole. So
I'm not sure what that was about. But it sounds like, I mean, it seems like he would probably start this game, but he's not really that appealing in this game anyhow. And I think that Montgomery will end up being a fairly popular play just because of what he's been doing, and he is, you know, significantly cheaper, $1,700 cheaper than Higgins, $1,500 cheaper than Richards. And like I said, I'm almost never using Tyrese Maxey anywhere over 6K. That's just my own opinion. I know he can get hot, but he's no Tyler Hero. You know what I mean? I think people were saying he's going to come in and beat the next true scorer, and I've seen him play good, but I haven't been that impressed with him. With that being said, he's going to drop 40 now. That's pretty much it for this slate. You know, early on, I think we're going to see a lot of people use up their PMR, you know, with the value that we see between Syracuse, Georgetown, you know, Jonquez for UCLA, and then bits and pieces here between Seton Hall, Rutgers, and you had mentioned, you know, Memphis being a target of yours. So it's an interesting slate. I think that for a bigger slate like this, that there's going to be guys who are higher owned than what we'll see on a normal Saturday slate where ownerships are more spread out. And that's just because I think DK chose to make the pricing this way to draw people in. So knowing that, you're going to want to get your leverage plays and knowing that everyone's going to – well, maybe not everyone, but a good portion of the people around me are going to be around, you know, Syracuse, Georgetown, and UCLA, and Notre Dame. Those are the two games I'm really probably targeting. Let's go over, again, if anybody is listening live, wants to call in, 516-602-9782. I do have it pulled up real quick, the night slate for DraftKings, which is five games. Let's quickly go through it. We don't have to break it down too much, but there's some good games on here. Drake versus Dayton, Georgia versus Arizona State, BYU, Utah State. That's going to be a fucking amazing game. Gonzaga and Arizona, looking forward to that, and St. Mary's and Cal. So an interesting slate. Looking at it right off the bat, Sam Merrill is questionable. That's a huge loss for Utah State if he's not around. Seeing the battle between Yoli Childs and Justin Bean and the returning Nemus Cueto, which, get this, Razzle, if Cueto starts tomorrow, or I mean, he's going to play, but if he starts, he's only 5.1K. Now, I know he's been hurt, and it's a pretty serious injury, but he had 9 fantasy points in 10 minutes against Fresno, and I mean, he's got 40-point upside, so 5.1K. An absolute lock if he starts, and I think he's probably a lock anyways. Is there any conceivable way we shouldn't roster him at 5-1, even if he plays 18 minutes?
I don't know if he can get there in 18 minutes. You know, especially against Childs, right? It's not like he's going up against a cupcake big man where he can just kind of dominate on the boards and pick up a couple blocks and, you know, get some putbacks or whatever in those 18 minutes. And I don't know that he jumps all the way up to 18 to 20 minutes, you know, that with it being such a slow return from a knee injury, you know, he may just see a 4 to 6 minute jump right now. You know, they have their eyes on next spring more than, you know, tomorrow. Because they are a pretty strong team. So I don't know that they're going to jump him that much.
I mean, they didn't even use him. They had a game against St. Catherine the other day, and they didn't even use him, and they didn't use Merrill either. I mean, obviously they didn't need to. Their team is good enough without those two. They're elite with them. They dropped 94 on a, you know, obviously a non-D1. But they didn't even use them. So, I mean, that's telling that you're right. He probably won't jump that high in minutes, but they're definitely going to need him for this game against BYU. And they have the luxury of taking it slow because of the emergence of Justin Bean, right? So maybe Childs ends up on Bean. I don't know how much they're going to share the floor together, Bean and Cueto. I mean, I don't think they thought Justin Bean was going to be this good. So that has something to do with it. But, it's something interesting to keep an eye on for sure, especially if Merrill can't go. You know, that's going to be pretty wild.
I mean, I assume they'll share the floor. How many overtimes did that Fresno State game go? Just one?
I think so.
Because Bean played all 45 minutes then in that game.
Yes.
So they would, you know, they would have shared all 10 of Cueta's minutes. And it looks like Anderson is going to be the one that loses out on some minutes because of Cueta's return at this point. Because he only played 18 in the Fresno State game. He did have 4 fouls, so that might have something to do with it as well. But, yeah, I mean, they could be short bodies, you know, like, was it Karwowski has been out with having his appendix removed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's another, you know, big man that played a bunch of minutes early in the season. So I just, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be one to do a lot of research into. You know, tomorrow as the day goes on, just to see. Because if they're, you know, if they are that shorthanded, that's probably just going to put me on Bean even more, to be honest.
Yeah, that's tough because, you know, Bean's 8'6", and I get it, but for 200 more, I get Obi Toppin against Drake. So that's quite a tough decision, on paper at least. You know, I'm a big Obi Toppin fan, and it's just, you know, Justin Bean's been absolutely murdering, so, it, you know, it's definitely warranted. But, yeah, we'll have to do some research on that one. Jumping over to the Gonzaga and Arizona game, one thing I noticed quite early on, and I'm starting to vocalize it more, and I'm going to assume other people have noticed, but Arizona, as good as their guards are and as good as Zeke Nanji is on offense, interior-wise, defensively, they just haven't been good at all. It's been a really – for DFS purposes, it's been a very profitable move targeting against the Arizona interior. And it's got me, you know, me and Forsky have been talking about when the Huskies play Arizona because their guards have – the Arizona's guards have a clear advantage. But my post's got the advantage, and that's going to be a fun one. But with that being said, Filip Petrušev and Killian Tilly are both two guys that I'm going to be looking to target pretty heavily. You know, obviously, you know, they're not at home, so that can be a risk of fouls. We're always going to have that risk. I try not to be a prisoner of potential fouls. Tilly, in the UW game, he went vintage Killian Tilly, where he's just in basically, for lack of a better term, God mode, where the Huskies played them very well. There's absolutely nothing you can do when Tilly's hitting, you know, fall-away Jays, every triple with a hand in his face. He's getting putbacks. He's just flying all over the court. When he's playing that way, they're unbeatable. He looks healthy. Any question about his health disappeared for me in that UW game. So I really like him at 6'8 against Arizona. I think that they're going to be very hard pressed to do anything to slow him down, unless they're going to double. You know, Petrušev is a guy I don't like paying that high price for him because he does have games where he gets in foul trouble or he'll disappear. But on paper, this is a matchup that he should really do well in and dominate. And the fact that Tilly is, you know, going to draw a lot of that defensive attention away, it kind of leaves the basket, you know, underneath for Petrušev to get, you know, easy bunnies and putbacks and things like that. So I like both of those guys a lot. Joel Ayayi is a guy I really, really like, but, you know, he's priced higher than Tilly. And I'm not ever going to pay, you know, more for him over Tilly now that I know Tilly's healthy. So I really like both of those guys. The Arizona guards, you know, they're always in play. Nico Mannion and Josh Green. Dylan Smith, I guess, is a god now. He had 24 fantasy points in the first half last game and then ended with 26. So the adjustment made by Omaha, I guess they decided to put a hand in his face because he didn't do anything that second half. What do you make of Dylan Smith? Like, suddenly he's you know, we used to joke last year about using him at that price and how he gave you nothing. Now all of a sudden the guy's putting up 24 and a half. Like, is he just playing above his head or what's going on?
I think it helps with Nico Mannion running the point. You know, where they had, like, Brandon Williams and Brandon Randolph, you know, with the ball in their hands. Completely different kind of point guard handling the ball. Putting him in pretty good spots to, you know, get at least a somewhat open look from three. And I'm sure Josh Green helps too, right? Like, he's super athletic wing, kind of projected to be a mid first round pick right now, it looks like. So I think it it's probably a combination of just another year at school and then, you know, the players around him would be my guess.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. One guy I do want to point out, a friend of mine, you know, he kind of discovered him in the game before for Arizona. And then we found an article that said he was going to start to see more minutes. Christian Coloco for Arizona. He had 13 minutes against Omaha, had 23 fantasy points, 5 and 10 rebounds. It was a game before that where my friend noticed and kind of put me on him. You know, he had 10 fantasy points, nothing that jumps off the page, but he just was kind of flying all over the court. He didn't have any rebounds in that game, but he was, you know, impacting shots. He was kind of boxing out. He was getting hands and feet. He was just a very active player. And normally you wouldn't see Coach Miller, you know, necessarily play these young, inexperienced guys unless it's really the game's out of hand or, you know, coach speak type of thing. But I think he's going to be forced to give Coloco at least, like, even if it's 15 minutes, you know, because Jeter gets in foul trouble. Nanji, you know, gets a little wild. He gets charging fouls, offensive fouls sometimes. I really like his game. He's wild at times. Coloco is just a guy that's, like, really high energy, super big, and just really attacks and is not afraid to get into the paint and mix it up and rebound. And I could see them needing him against the Gonzaga front court. So not a guy I'm saying to, you know, necessarily go all in on, but somebody to keep an eye on. GPP purposes, I regret not playing him in my main last game against Omaha because I didn't expect 23, but I thought he could pay off 3-6, and I was really regretful. I only had him in a tournament. But just a name to put you guys on, pay attention to. Georgia and ASU, you know, people call me a Remy Martin hater. It's really not that I'm a Remy Martin hater. It's just that I hate the way he goes into ISO mode. And I know he can score and the guy can get a bucket whenever he wants. But early last year, like, he was really dropping dimes, facilitating more. You know, that Remy Martin is the one I want to see. I don't want to see the one that's just jacking up, you know, ill-advised shot after ill-advised shot. Now, we saw last game against Prairie View A&M. They had a really hard time closing him out despite Prairie View's two best players being in foul trouble. And when they brought in Verge to run the point, the whole complexity of the game changed. Verge is a really gifted scorer himself, but he's very unselfish. You know, he only had two assists last game, and that's just because he was leading a lot of, you know, dump-offs and Romello White, and then he was getting fouled. So he wasn't finishing the assists, but he was definitely putting guys in position, mostly Romello, to score because Verge is very good at getting to the basket and drawing defensive contact, getting to the foul line himself, and then dishing it off to Romello. So as a Romello White owner in Dynasty, I love when Alonzo Verge is running the point because I know White's going to get his points, where Remy is going to, you know, he's going to go into ISO mode, which is fine, but he was getting benched more. He took two bad shots last game, and his ass got benched by Hurley, and I think it might be a wake-up call for him that, hey, we have Verge here that's more than willing to pass the ball because with Romello White on the team, they have to start getting him more and more involved. He only had two shot attempts against Prairie View, but 42 fantasy points. I was on Romello Island, not trying to brag or anything, but it was really nice to get a guy like that that's not owned, and he just, you know, puts up 14 and 16, shoots 10 for 14 from the foul line. Just imagine if he actually was able to, you know, get clean looks at the basket underneath. So I'm a big fan of Romello White. I think this is a matchup that you can target him in. I think he'll, again, even though he just put up 42, go unowned because people are going to gravitate towards that BYU front court, Utah State guys, Gonzaga, Arizona, that type of thing. So I definitely like Romello White here. And I, like I said, I like the offense with Verge running it. And Georgia, I'm almost never using Georgia players. If I can help it, I know Edwards has looked good recently, but I wouldn't be on him. You haven't had time to look at this game, I'm sure, but you know, is there any names on either team that you're interested in there?
Yeah, down in the under 4K mark, Tumani Kamara from Georgia, increase in minutes recently. Ngamizi was suspended. Kamara was a top 100 recruit this year, so the talent's there. You know, he's over the last two, he's combined for over 39 DK points. You know, so I like his spot here just for GPP purposes. And then Arizona State, I'm going back to Tayshaun Cherry. He burnt a lot of us against Prairie View A&M, but then his price dropped 800 and he's down to 3,500. So he doesn't have to do a ton. But, you know, if he plays the 17 to 18 minutes, he can definitely get us 5X or more, I guess. He did, you know, fall out the last game against Prairie View A&M. But, you know, Arizona State seems pretty straightforward to me. You know, like Jalen House does a little bit of things. Jalen Graham's minutes have kind of fallen off. As the season progressed, he started out playing a ton of minutes, but now he's kind of dropped off. So they've definitely tightened their rotation up quite a bit, you know, to where Kamani Lawrence is just playing, you know, in the teens for minutes as well, you know, where he played in the 20s to begin the season. So I think that you're going to want to target this game, even though we don't like targeting Georgia players. I think there's, you know, there's still going to be fantasy points scored between these two teams. So,
yeah, and the Graham's decrease in minutes is really just comes down to Romello White being healthy the first couple games of the year. You know, he was not healthy, not seeing his full minutes. And then Tayshaun Cherry, I like that call, but obviously, you know, the fouls are a risk. Maybe at that price, it doesn't become as risky. But he does average 7.4 fouls per 40. He does get really grabby down there and aggressive and a little wild, so that's been the issue. And Romello White has slimmed down this year and is only getting 2.3 fouls per 40, knock on wood. He doesn't get in trouble tomorrow. So, yeah, big price difference, obviously, but I like the cherry call. And Kamara, that's an interesting call for Georgia, too. Let's talk about St. Mary's and Cal. You know, that's the hammer game, so probably maybe want a little bit of exposure to it. Cal hasn't been very good at all. Kareem South has kind of come on lately. I do like him. Probably not at 5'6" year, but he's been over 20 fantasy points in four straight games. Seems like, you know, he's a grad transfer also. Seems like he's starting to settle in a little bit. It is really interesting to see that Matt Bradley's price has dropped to 6'4". He just had a 32 fantasy point game at 7'2" against Fresno, and dropped to 6'4", and he's been at 7'4" most of the year. So that's going to make me look pretty hard at Matt Bradley, even though I don't necessarily love this matchup. He's a pretty high-volume guy for them, and the only guy besides occasionally South who can go out and get his own bucket. So that's really interesting to me that they felt the need to do that. For St. Mary's, you know, Malik Fitz and Jordan Ford, those guys are both, you know, the all-everything for them. Matthias Tass, Tommy Cousy and Tanner Krebs kind of have been interesting. And then a potential value guy, Krister Zorix at 3-4. He's not super exciting by any means. He did have 27 minutes last game against Dayton, had 23 fantasy points. So another guy under 4K that you can probably just throw out there and maybe temper your expectations a little bit. But the last three games, he's seen over 20 minutes. He's kind of kicked Logan Johnson aside, and he's an afterthought now, so I think you could probably confidently use him for at least the minutes. So an interesting slate, lots of value on it as well. I think that, you know, you're really going to come down to picking the right studs, and you see right at the top there, Childs, Toppin, and Bean, and then the second tier being, you know, Petrusev, Tilly, Romello White, those kind of guys. So I think that is it. We got through that slate pretty fast. I appreciate everybody who listened. Razzle, you've got some stuff going on. What you tell people what do you got going on? Where can they find you? You're at DFS Army, and what else you got going on?
Over at DFS Army, and then I've kind of joined up with apparel with Chalk Donkey. So getting some of my followers, friends, and family, you know, a 20% off link if you're looking for some, I guess, some shirts with some DFS sayings on it, and shirts, sweatshirts. But they told me that they're adding a bunch of new designs here coming soon as well. So kind of excited to join up with them and see what they have to offer going forward.
Perfect. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you calling in, taking time. Good. Best of luck tomorrow, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you soon.
Sounds good. Good luck to you, and good luck to everybody.
All right, take care. Cool. Thank you very much, Razzle. Good as always. I think we did a very good job covering both slates for you guys, whether you're playing on DraftKings or FanDuel. there's going to be – the main thing right now is that we're still figuring out teams, because during this time a lot of people look like superstars because they're beating up on cupcakes and non-con, and now they're starting to play conference games and tougher opponents, and you're seeing a big drop-off in production. So it's really important that you look just beyond, you know, some of these optimizers and these sites that have, you know, projections and fantasy points per minute. It's not always about that. You got to find a nice combo, you know, of, what is it, matchups, fantasy points per minute, and then, you know, other factors like, you know, a coach, whether it be a player out, a player coming back from injury, somebody out with injury, a transfer, all these factors. But I appreciate everybody who listened to us. Yeah, Maron, best of luck tomorrow. If you want to be a part of the RotoCurve content and you haven't joined yet, www.rotocurve.com/college-basketball. We have $10 weekly subs if you want to try us out, $32 monthly subs, and then a special yearly price if you want to join up for a year. We just had a new this week subscriber, Jester, win the, what was it, the $1 GPP on DK tonight, being hit for $50 with a, was it a 240 score, 238 score, I think. So only been with us a week and already taken down a tournament. So appreciate all the support. Best of luck to everyone tomorrow, and I'll be around on Twitter, Slack, and everywhere else you need me. See ya.
Yeah.